Welcome to the WBFO Press Pass. I'm Mark Scott, joined by Buffalo Spree's Elizabeth Licata.
Hello, Mark.
How are you today?
I'm great.
The October issue is described as the conversation issue. A variety of experts engage in conversations on several important local topics, and I thought we'd have a conversation about a couple of them, starting with the expansion project at the Albright Knox Art Gallery. Refresh our memory. What's happening there?
Well, for many years now, for decades, we've known that the Albright Knox, like many other museums, does not have space to show a lot of its collection, and including, like, they are continually acquire art, major pieces of art. And in order to put together exciting traveling exhibitions and show even just the highlights from the collection, it's very, very difficult. And people get angry. You know, back when they had extreme abstraction, and that was quite some time ago, maybe 2003 or 4 or something like that, maybe a little later, people complained because their old favorites were not in their usual places because the show took up so much of the museum. So the museum needs to expand, but it's hard. They are very limited within their footprint. They're in an Olmsted Park. They really can't go too much further into the park, so they have to come up with really creative solutions.
But there has been some drawings about
Yes.
what's planned, and there's been some vocal opposition.
Right. There, a few months back, they hired an architectural firm, and that firm has come up with a drawing, and it has been published. And immediately, as soon as it was, then you saw a lot of opposition sprang up in social media, and then I believe that there was a letter from the Preservation Board where they said this is, you know, since these are historic, you know, these are landmarked, all of the Bund Shaft and the 1905 E.B. Green building are both landmarked and were very soon after the Bund Shaft was built, which is unusual in any case.
Because 1962.
That's right. That's right. But it was immediately seen as such a dynamic and important part, and that this entire campus needed to be landmarked as well. And so, and I don't know that landmarked is the exact term, but there is a historic preservation ordinance covering the campus. In any case, so we need to have a say in this. And so that came, you know, so there's the combination of some public opposition, and I know that there are people who like the design that was come up with, and also some official opposition or at least admonition or, you know, just involve us, that they're having some more public meetings and they're proceeding with Preservation Studios, I think, is now working with them, and they're working with the Preservation Board. So they'll go ahead and maybe they'll come up with a new plan. Maybe they'll keep the one they've got.
Is it even possible, given the significance of this landmark, to reach a consensus that satisfies
it's
everyone?
Not.
Yeah, I
it's
didn't think
not.
So.
And I really liked what our three panelists in the roundtable, I really liked what they had to say. I thought they had very interesting things to say, and in particular when Mike Tunkey said, well, you know, posting on social media is not true civic engagement, that, you know, you can post on Facebook all you want, but if you really, you're going to have to get involved. You have to go in there, attend meetings, and make your voice heard in other ways.
Well, David Steele, the architect
Yes.
who grew up in Buffalo, now lives in Chicago, he says the current buildings should be considered a part of the gallery's current collection of art and treated accordingly. Art critic Richard Huntington says the 1962 edition will be diminished as part of any solution. So some divergent opinion there.
Well, I think that they're right. I mean, I think they're both right.
Yeah.
They're both right. And so, I mean, whatever solution they come up with isn't going to make everybody happy. But there are certain things. Richard makes some points there. There are certain things about the Bund Shaft, like the small courtyard is really underused. Some of the quarter galleries are not, you know, ideal for showcasing art. So, I mean, maybe there's some improvement there, but still, it will look different, and that's the thing that's bothering a lot of people.
And the next step will be the release of new drawings.
New
and
drawings,
concepts,
yeah. But eventually they're going to have to come up with someone, and it's not going to make everybody happy.
Let's move on to the local restaurant scene. We've actually touched on a lot of food-related topics in past conversations here on Press Pass, but I was intrigued by the question the local restaurateurs were asked in the October issue. Is Buffalo oversaturated when it comes to the number of restaurants we have? What do you think?
Oh, certainly not. Certainly not. This is what we've heard every time someone builds a new apartment building that's sold out before it's even finished. Too many apartments? Obviously not. Mm-hmm. Same thing with hotel rooms. Certainly true with restaurants, even more so, because hotels and apartment buildings don't close and open as much frequency as restaurants do. We see restaurants close all the time. We see new ones. It is a very dynamic industry. It's one that is always changing. There's always new ones coming in. There's always restaurants that close. As you know, I'm sure you've heard the statistics about 50% yeah. chance. So
even my own neighborhood is seeing a dramatic change because Mulberry's is moving in on Main Street in Snyder. And next door, Sienna is having
yes,
a lease dispute
yes.
and might be moving down the street into what is now a funeral home. So things are changing even in my own little community.
Yes, and there was a restaurant next to the funeral home as well.
Tabree.
Tabree used
yeah.
to be there,
mm-hmm.
but Tabree
mm-hmm.
is no longer there, and that
exactly.
is now...
It's vacant, but it's not big enough for Sienna, I don't think.
Right.
They have a
See,
bigger footprint where
well,
they
you're,
are now.
You're making my point.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's always in flux, that yeah. industry. They're yeah. always moving in and out and changing.
Do you think smartphone apps that deliver restaurant-quality meals to your home or services such as Blue Apron, are those kinds of things having an impact on restaurant patronage?
I don't think so, really. I mean, I just think it's – people just don't have as much time to cook as they used to, and they want to have a quality meal. So you see, like, for example, Blue Apron. But this is a way to get – it used to be that the only thing you get delivered to your house was a pizza. And how many nights are you going to be able to have pizza mm-hmm. or Chinese food, for example? And now you can get a – if to get restaurant-quality meal delivered when you weren't planning to go out anyways, you would have had to cook at home. Instead, you can have a great meal with no effort. Of course, people are going to take advantage of that. I don't think it'll hurt the restaurants at all.
Good point. You weren't going to go out anyway.
That's right. Yeah.
Vegging into staying in the night
there's
watching
no way,
TV.
But yeah. you're not going to, you know, yeah. eat a pizza every night either, so. Yeah.
Well, I had an epiphany a couple of years ago. If I'm going to go out now and spend money on a restaurant meal, I want to do it at a locally owned establishment, no national chains. Still, I will admit that before I had that epiphany, we would patronize a place like Olive Garden. And I was always amazed that on a busy Friday and Saturday night, you have to wait 45 minutes to be seated when you could go to your neighborhood Italian restaurant where the food is probably better and get seated right away. And I always wondered, you know, why is it like this?
It's inexplicable as far as I'm concerned. I suppose people have the idea that places like that might be cheaper, that you always know exactly what you're going to get there. Some people might feel more comfortable bringing a family with small children into a place like that. That could be I've never been to an Olive Garden, so I'm finding this question hard to answer.
Okay, yeah. I mean, we haven't been in years now since... if I'm going to go Italian, it's going to be a local restaurant because we have so many.
Oh, yes, we do. I think my thing about restaurants is I want to eat something that I can't make myself. That's my other thing. And also, at restaurants, they get such a better quality... fish and meats than you could ever buy in the supermarket.
Yeah.
So that's another thing.
Yeah. Just a quick story to share. We were traveling to the Catskills for a wedding last month, and we were about 30 miles east of Binghamton on Route 17 when we saw a sign for a Wendy's in a town called Deposit.
Oh, sure, Deposit,
New York. Well,
mm-hmm.
it was time for a bathroom
Passed
break.
Passed it many times.
Okay, and a bite to eat. And since I was looking for something local, I said, let's just not go to Wendy's just yet. Let's see what else is here. And we saw a sign for Butterfield's Cafe this way. So we found the cafe. From the outside, it looked quaint. We were seated on the patio. the owner's cat sat down next to us while we ate. I had a bowl of pea soup that was absolutely scrumptious. My wife enjoyed her sandwich, and it was a totally enjoyable experience from the ambience to the quality of the food. The owners invited us to stop by again. I don't know if we'll ever be back that way, but if you are heading to New York on Route 17, look for it.
Butterfield's.
Yeah.
I'm going to remember this.
Yeah, yeah. And again, a local place, and we were much better served, and it was a much better experience than if we had gone to
It could have been the
Wendy's.
Opposite, though.
Yeah.
And that's why
people
do go to places like Wendy's, because it's a sure thing. Yeah. You know exactly what you're going to get. But it was a good thing that you took a chance that time.
Finally, your Buffalo Days column at the end of the October issue features some wonderful photos from a staff outing you folks at Spree took. And you do this once a year?
Oh, yes. This is a sort of professional enrichment. Because we are a city regional magazine, we think it's really important that we are very familiar with all the things that make our region great. I mean, we went to Niagara Falls, and many people had not been to the Three Sisters part of, mm-hmm. a lot of people just stop at the falls and then go. So this was Old Fort Niagara, and I think most of us had been there. Maybe some hadn't, but we had a great tour. And I will say that people learned a lot on the tour that they had no idea about the history of Old Fort Niagara and also about the kind of things that they do there, the educational programming. Everyone said they got a lot out of it.
It's been too long since I've been there, but it was memorable. My son, who's now 31, was still in middle school or high school, and at Christmas time we went because the Christmas decorations were set up and all the lights are off, and there are just candles burning as part of the decorations. And I remember walking outside and seeing the sky like I have never seen it before, because there's no light pollution there. And it was just a wonderful experience. Then had dinner at one of the Youngstown restaurants that since burned. I can't remember the name, but it was, again, a fantastic experience.
Fife and Drum, was
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah. Yes. And after reading your article today, it's like, we got to get back up there.
It's a spectacularly beautiful place any time of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. Elizabeth, always enjoy talking with you.
Thanks, Mark. It's always a pleasure.
Elizabeth Licata is editor of Buffalo Spree. Mark Scott, WBFO News.